Hey, everybody, welcome, and thank you for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. My name is Zach. I'm here with Laura. This is part two of our Ask Me Anything. We actually did a good job. We stayed on top of the questions. I think we had a few different styles of questions from different parts of the internet, so that was kind of cool. And I got to talk about a few of my favorite things. Once again, we love hearing from you. Thank you for sending us your questions. Thanks for following us on the socials. Thanks for your reviews on iTunes. All of that helps us keep doing what we do. So again, I'm grateful. And this is a very cool conversation. Stick around.
Living my best life.
What are you doing?
I'm in Carmel. Carmel by the Sea, which I've learned is you can't just say Carmel. You have to say Carmel by the Sea. And everything that I say on this podcast is going to sound pretty awful, I think. I mean, I think it's going to like...
Because of your microphone or because you're a terrible person?
Because I'm a terrible person. It's just going to sound incredibly privileged. And I just want you to know I'm very aware of that. And let's just allow it to be the fact. I recognize I'm incredibly privileged. But we're on this journey where we're on sort of like, oh, I have to tell you about this really thing, the amazing thing that happened. Okay.
Okay.
So we're here in Carmel because... By the Sea, because Ryan's mom said, I want to have a goodbye Judy tour Heck. To Carmel by the Sea. Judy Heck, that's right. So if you've been following the podcast, we have gone through the loss of my father-in-law, which was at this point, I don't even remember. I think it was 2 years ago. And he had Alzheimer's for maybe about 8 years. And anyway, so she wanted to come to Carmel by the Sea, which was a place that she would come annually with her husband every New Year's. And she's getting up there in age. I think Judy is maybe 78 years old. And she wanted to come play Pebble Beach, which is a really nice golf course, but she obviously wouldn't come here by herself any longer. So she asked if we would be willing to come and do a goodbye tour of the golf courses here with her. So yes, of course we said yes. And she also said, and I'll pay. And I was like, in 100%, whatever you want, I'm here. So we are here and they spread some of Pop's ashes, on the 18th green, I believe it was, which was really special.
Are you allowed to do
that? Honor? No, I don't think so. I don't think it's like,
so you
something
just confessed to a crime on the podcast.
I did 100%. Come at me, bro. And then while we were on our way walking to dinner, which was something that, because she said, I'm paying for everything. I said, awesome. I said, how would you feel about going to a Michelin rated restaurant? And she was like, no, that's too expensive. She has paid through the nose for everything else. I was like, okay, if you're going to go ahead and poo poo that, this is a journey that I need for this trip. Don't need want. So I booked us a table for the four of us, my 9-year-old included. This is why it sounds really silly. We walk in and of course they're like, hi, you have a 9-year-old at a Michelin restaurant. Can we have a conversation about that? Will he be dining with us today? I said, oh yes, this kid has an amazing palate. He ate everything. It was an 8-course meal and he ate absolutely everything, which was very cool. Here's the creepy part that I have to share with you. We're walking to the dinner reservations. I know I'm a chatterbox because I've only been hanging out with my family for the last 5 days. We're walking to dinner and we see this man walking a dog with his wife. And I look up at him and I just have this overwhelming sense that the person looking back at me is Pop. And I had like kind of tingles and I was like, gosh, that's really weird. Like he resembles Pop, like something about him. And I just can't put my finger on it. Like, I feel like he just looks like him. His posture looks like him. And I'm walking next to Judy and then she goes, whoa, that was weird. And I said, what? She said, that man looked so much like Gary. And I was like, yes, you had it too. I had that weird sensation. And then we caught up with Ryan. And I said, hey, did you happen to notice the guy that we just passed? And he said, yeah. Did you see how much he looked like Pop? It was the weirdest thing. So I just think we had a little bit of a moment yesterday where it was passing a man on the side of the street. There's something about him. We can't put our finger on it that reminded us of Pop. But anyway, we just accepted it as this is a goodbye tour
and
for Gary and Judy.
And you all turned around and he wasn't there anymore.
Exactly. And there were 2 feet Do you know what I'm talking about? There were two
footprints in the sand.
Yeah. But it was really special. So we're doing something pretty special. I told my mom we would do a goodbye tour for her at some point as well. I think she has selected Alaska to go to, because she is also unpartnered. She's just, I mean, I think at some point you kind of make the decision that you can't travel anymore. You just get too old to travel and see the things that you really want to see. And I said to her that we would take her on a goodbye tour, but if she wants to do Alaska, it's a little more adventurous. So she's going to need to have her goodbye tour a little earlier in life. But, yeah, I think we need to call that something, and maybe it is already a thing. Do you know, like, maybe. You know how you have like a baby moon and your a honeymoon? Trip. Yeah. What is your goodbye tour?
Yeah.
I don't know. Your last trip. Well, let's coin it. You heard it here first.
Okay, you can die now.
Good morning, everyone. I have had my fifth cup of coffee. I'm just feeling great here in Carmel by the sea. I'm in a great mood. Yeah. How are you?
Yeah. I'm good. I just dropped my wife off for surgery.
Yeah.
We got in a fight in the car on the way down there.
Oh, about something stupid. Is she stressed out?
Like, I was like, bye. But I was like, bye. I just literally dropped her off at the curb of the hospital because that's just how they want you to do it. Like, and then I had to roll down the window and go,
her?
I love you, just in case you there die you on the table. Just, you know, I don't want the last thing to say to her. I know, right? Isn't that terrible?
Yes.
So
we literally just spent a weekend talking to people. And one of the things was, I think one of our groupies was kind of like, yeah, I realized that when my partner has like an emotion that's confusing, oh no, this is one of my clients, I just get really curious about it. And I was like, don't you think maybe perhaps you got in a fight because she was nervous about going in to surgery and you took the bait?
Yeah.
Yeah. You text her and tell her you love her. Will you repair?
I'll tell her.
This is perhaps like the second or third time I've asked you to repair with your wife sooner than you're ready and willing to.
Yeah.
What else is happening? You're home.
I was traveling. I went traveling this weekend. I went to Bend, Oregon. Hung out with
my friend. The place.
Yeah, and that was pretty fun. We did a good job. We did a good job not killing each other, and also we did a good job with our thing that we were tasked to do, teaching the workshop that we were teaching.
We did a phenomenal job. I think that was our best teaching that we've ever done, which was for the Gottman Institute. We teach their curriculum, which is pretty cool. And we're kind of just like the hired smarty pants. That went really well. And I agree. I texted you. I said, I think that was our best like friendship visit ever.
It was. Yeah.
Because I didn't have like that many negative thoughts about you while you were here.
That's so sweet. Yeah. And you found out that I couldn't smell anything and you just decided to be all just yourself in your full natural, like, I'm at home by myself.
I was like, I'm so glad that he shared that he can't smell. I was like, that's awesome. Cause I normally wouldn't hold this in, if I was home. So I'm just not going to. And I had some flatulence and he could not smell it and they were
good
silent.
Grief.
Yeah.
And we went on a double day with your hot mom friends. That was pretty fun.
Oh my gosh. They're going to be so happy you said that. It's true. He was like, if I come into town, will you wrangle up all of your hot mom friends and then have them adore me and think I'm amazing and
I didn't
like
feel
feed me
especially
grapes.
Adored though. That was a little
I
bit
don't
of
think
a letdown.
You were.
Yeah.
Yeah. You came in and it was like, you were like the ignored husband or, you know, like the brother that came into town where they're like, we already know everything about you. We're not going to give you any attention.
And now I'm like, I don't really have anything on my horizon right now, which is weird. Not exactly true. We're traveling. That's actually really the opposite of true. At the end of the month, I'm going to three places. I'm going to three cities without going to Seattle first. So we leave here. We go to New York City for Mary's spring break for a few days. From New York, I go to Denver to do some training. And then from Denver, I go to California to do some weddings. And then I go home to Seattle. So I have to pack one suitcase for three different things. Yeah.
That's okay. Cause you basically wear the same thing for everything. So
it's true.
I got to pack a suit for
this wedding. So that's going to be
complicated. Will you take a picture? I've never seen you in a suit. I've never even seen you in a blazer.
I got you. Yeah. I'll hook you up.
Okay. Take a picture. We'll post it on the Instagram so you can see what he looks
the
like.
The last picture I have of me in a suit, it's like a kind of a pseudo suit. I look at this picture and I'm like, what is going on? And this is like, I don't even, I reckon, and Rebecca just looks at it and she goes, you're going through something. You're just, that's her answer to the picture. You were going through something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For this wedding, is it possible that you may trim your eyebrows? So
no,
here's a fun fact, y'all.
I will not be doing that.
Because I was sitting next to Zach, teaching, I was like, I would turn and I was within, I don't know, 8 inches of your face. And I had a chance to really get an up close personal look at your eyebrows. And I offered to trim them. I offered to take you to the nail salon to have them wax them. He has these,
I have one.
It's not just one, sweetheart. That one happens to be fully gray, but he has a
one
few
gray
rogue
one
hairs.
That is longer and coarser. And it reminds me that I'm Wolverine.
It curls like an eyelash, like a beautiful woman eyelash where all the others are going one direction. That one happens to curl up. Yep. But you have many more. It's just that they're the same shade as the rest of your eyebrows.
It's like I'm like Cindy Crawford, and she has her beauty mark.
Oh, with
that's
the
like
mole.
My beauty mark. Yeah.
Okay.
So just,
well, then
just
we can't get rid of
I'm
it.
Like season. Yeah, totally.
Funny story. So my husband left with my son on a road trip to Pebble Beach 4 days ago, and we have just been reunited, and I'm getting ready in the bathroom here in Carmel, searching through his toiletry bag for toothpaste, and wouldn't you know it, there is my missing OneSkin moisturizer. That sneaky turtle. I have always suspected that he's been using my favorite skincare, but I've never actually seen him apply it. So there you have it, folks. OneSkin isn't just for the lady who wants to turn back time and simplify their skincare regimen. It's for the gentleman as well. OneSkin was founded by 4 PhDs dedicated to skin longevity, and their topical supplements make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without all of those extra steps. So what is the secret? OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It is the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent cells, those notorious zombie cells that contribute to skin aging. So fewer zombie cells means healthier, younger looking skin with fewer lines and wrinkles, reduced age spots, and a stronger natural barrier. So that's something especially important this time of year. OneSkin is more than just skincare. It's about skin longevity. It's targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your very best at every age. So get started today with 15% off using your code MTR at oneskin.co with code MTR. And after you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. So please support our show. Tell them that we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin.
Enough about your eyebrows. Let's get on to something, because I was reading some of our reviews, which were up to like 600 and something reviews. Did you realize our folks are working hard to give us reviews?
Sorry. I've been eating overnight oats. Like, I've been eating them because I think they're yummy, and they have the coolest advertising and branding. One of the things that they do in their branding is that they post their 1-star reviews.
I'm like,
we should just post our 1-star reviews, because sometimes I read them and they make me sad, but then I'm like, that's okay. I think 1-star reviews say more about the reviewer than they do about the thing being reviewed universally. Yeah. I think this is true. So I'm interested in high comedy there.
Snowbird in Utah is this just a lovely ski resort, and they also post their 1-star reviews, and the best one on the billboard is like, too much snow. I was disappointed. Too much snow. The 1-star reviews are the best.
Come in and have the worst clam chowder one lady on Yelp has ever had in her whole life.
Damn it, Karen. She doesn't like clam chowder to start with. She gets, anyway.
We started last week. We were going to do Ask Me Everything, Anything, and we got into it. We only had two. We only got through two questions, but now we're going to do about four more today, four or five more.
Okay. All right.
So I have them here, and we'll tackle them in the orders that we like. So I have a favorite one that I'm going to do
right now.
I'm going to give you one, and then I'm going to do my favorite one. Okay.
Uh-oh.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready? Okay. Mm-hmm. These are from the internet. Laura, what is more helpful, to create more positive, I'm sorry, what is more helpful, to create more positivity or decrease negativity in the relationship?
More positivity. That's my final answer. That's it. That's all I got. It was a closed-ended question, not an open-ended question. So I answered it with a closed statement. I create more positivity. Thank you for asking.
Okay. I would categorize that. Sassy. I would agree with you. And I would say...
Oh, you would?
One more time? Yeah.
I'm surprised. Yeah, I didn't think you would. Okay.
Well, there's a couple things about that. One is, if you imagine that you're moving in a direction, let's call it left, and you are west, let's say you're moving west, you can either move toward the west or away from the east. And I think those are different kinds of movement. Like if you're moving, I don't know, I don't really like east and west, but if you're moving over there, you can either move toward that thing over there, or you can move away from this thing that's right here. And I think the energy of moving towards something is better than the energy of moving away from something.
I think
it's more
too.
Valuable. Like, right. I'd rather run toward a goal than away from a dog that's chasing me, for example.
Mm-hmm. The stick or the carrot, if you will.
They're both the same direction. They may be the same speed. The other thing is, like, I was thinking about how when we teach these events, we watch these videos that we've seen 100 times, and then like something new always jumps out at me. But I heard John say, like for the 100th time, but also anew, the idea that the positive is actually more accurate. Like
right.
Using rose-colored glasses is actually more accurate view of the world. And so not only is it better to do more positivity than less negativity, it's actually more accurate. It's a more accurate reflection of what's really going on in on the planet and in the relationship. So I would say, I would agree with you, and I would caveat with those two or those perspectives about that.
Interesting. Okay. I think it's kind of fun. I just want to share that particular study of like why the rose-colored glasses are actually more accurate, just to give a little bit of background information. Okay. And it's not a study that was actually done by Dr. Gottman. It's one that he cites that was done by Robertson and Price, where they had trained observers, so scientists that were observing couples, and their job was to simply calculate any positive interaction between the two of them and any negative. So they were basically counting between an interaction of a couple, observing them. Oh, she just touched his arm. That's positive. Oh, he just, you know, like raised his left eyebrow. That's contempt. That's negative. She, you know, so they're going back and forth and they're calculating all the positive things and all the negative things. And then they have this couple come around and watch a video of that same interaction and do the same exact thing, calculate all the positive things that happened between the couple and all the negative things that happened between them. And it turns out that the couples that were happily married to begin with actually were in pretty close alignment with the researchers. So if the researchers said you guys were about 85% positive, 15% negative, the happy couples had the same observation. The unhappy couples, when they observed themselves and calculated all of the positives and all of the negatives, actually missed about 50% of all of the positive interactions that occurred between the two of them. So they rated themselves in much less positivity than the outside observers. Not only that, but they took neutral events and they categorized it as negative, which I thought was really interesting. So what that study shows us is that when you are in a negative place in your relationship, or your relationship isn't as happy or healthy, you actually wear these really tainted lenses and you end up missing all of the positive interactions between the two of you. Not only that, but you also interpret those interactions that are neutral as being more negative. What do you do with a couple like that? Do you help them to learn how to reduce those negative interactions, or do you help them to observe and recognize the positive interactions, the positive? So the answer of, would you lean more into helping a couple increase the positives, or would you help them reduce the negatives? If I only got one choice, I would help them to recognize not only that the positives are already existing and happening in the relationship, but I would also help them to beef up those positive interactions.
It's also more fun to work on the positive than it is to work on minimizing the negative. Like, that's just
totally
part of what is cool about. Okay. Well, since we're in the neighborhood, I'll ask you this question too. What is the first step to restore friendship in my marriage?
The very first step? I mean, the way that we teach it.
Yeah. That's
it's
the question.
Through curiosity. It's through being interested in who your partner is. So it's restoring friendship is being interested. And kind of not only that, but I would say if I'm going to do something, like I'm going to engage in my partner and try and restore friendship and be interested in them, then my partner also has to be interesting to me, meaning that they have to be interested in something so that I have something to sink my teeth into. So, you know, it's like when relationships have been together for a long time and I'm asking that you lean into your partner and get interested, I would say also give your partner something to be interested in, like have some hobbies, read some books, listen to a podcast, like give them something new and different to be curious about, because we think we know everything about our partner. And maybe that assumption is true, but also maybe like shake some things up a little bit, learn something new. So that's where I would start. So I would be curious about my partner.
You start with curiosity.
I would. Do I get the answer right?
What is the first step? Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's the textbook answer anyway. It's certainly that I would go to. Now I'm trying to think of like, what's the off answer? What's the first step to restore friendship in my marriage? You know, maybe I'm thinking about this through the 12 step lens, which is the first step is to admit that you're powerless, right? That you have mucked it up, that whatever it is that you did to get here isn't going to get you there. And that humility and that, I don't know, openness or awareness actually opens the door to opportunity. I know that's a little like heady or maybe like a little like obscure in terms of like what it is, but like if I'm thinking about the first step, it would seem to me that it's about, you know, like just acknowledging that you need to, that your friendship isn't what you want it to be. And
yeah,
I think obviously the other piece of that puzzle is that you need someone else who shares that acknowledgement with you. You know, you can't just restore it by yourself. But if you were, I would think I would go back to curiosity for sure.
Yeah. I was kind of also thinking about just friendship in general, like not even your partner, but just your friendship. You know, if I was to re-engage with someone that maybe I have been distant from, how might I re-engage with them? Actually, I got really great advice from my brother-in-law. This is Ryan's brother. And he said, just call, just pick up the phone and call them. And it might be a 3-minute conversation, but at least you made the effort and was like, oh man, I needed to hear that today. And he said, and then just keep calling, be consistent. So, I mean, if I was to put this in language that we often teach, it's making more bids for connection. So reach out and say, do you want to go for a walk? Do you want to have a conversation? Would you like to go out for lunch? What did you think about this article that I sent you this afternoon? And it's just, you know, like making more bids for connection.
Uh-huh. Do you think that leads into what you're talking about in terms of bids for connection? Does that lead into this next question? Or is it how you would answer this next question, which is how do you bring change to the dynamic of a 30-year marriage?
How do I bring change to the dynamic of a 30-year marriage? I would say it starts with you. A lot of people come into our office and they are looking for change, but they're looking for change in their partner. And they're saying things like, in order for this relationship to change, my partner needs to be X, Y, or Z, whatever it might be. And that is 100% going to end in a fire of flames. So if you're looking for change, then you need a change. And it goes back a little bit to what I said, which is if you want your partner to be interested in you and curious about you and find you fascinating and lovely and admirable, give them something to admire, like be interesting, have hobbies, lean into something different. So if you're looking for change in the relationship, then change things about you by, you know, like go to a yoga class, have a few new friends, like try a different meal. So that's the first place I would shake it up.
Okay. I like it.
Is within myself, not with my partner.
I love that answer actually, because I think what's weird about my own like evolution as a therapist is as a couples therapist is that I am more and more convinced that change for the couple's relationship comes through individual responsibility.
Yeah.
Like it comes through exactly what you're describing. Like you have to step up and take care of your side of the street And you have to do that independent of whether or not your partner responds. So part of the fight we got into this morning was that Rebecca and I were nitpicking a little bit, and I said something that she didn't like, and then she said something that I didn't like. What we acknowledged or tapped into in that car ride was, okay, it's okay that we disagree about this topic, but let's do it as adults, you know? And so we were back and forth a little bit between our temptation to just play dirty. Okay. The other thing that I've been thinking about though, if I'm trying to answer this question sincerely, is that true change can only happen when there's the kind of the appropriate balance of stress and safety. Like, people don't change if they're not stressed, because there's no reason to change. Like, there's, you know, but they also can't change in a healthy way if there's not safety. And so
you have
to,
like,
if you want to change the dynamic in a 30-year marriage, you have to provide enough safety to then also bring this desire for change, that stresses, you know, that stresses the moment and says, we can't do this like this anymore. I don't want to do this like this anymore. But that has to, you know, you can't have one without the other and expect there to be effective or lasting change in a relationship.
That sounds like some Esther Perel stuff, to be honest. Like, it's been a long time since I've thought about that, but holy moly, is that such important advice. You can't have change. You can't have stress without safety. And I would say that couples
who
can
have stress without safety, but that will make you erratic in your responses, you know, make you really urgent and protective and defend, like, you'll go to your fight or flight responses.
Yeah. So most couples, I would say, that have had those 30-year relationships, they have settled into a whole lot of safety. There's a lot of predictability. Mm-hmm. There's very little novelty. And so I think what we're both coming around to is the idea of introducing new stresses. And the idea of introducing new stresses comes from trying new things and, you know, putting yourself out there, going on these long trips. I think there is nothing more interesting for couples who have a good, strong safety net with one another than to travel, because everything is new and novel in those experiences for the two of you. And you can't predict and plan too far in advance. And something's going to happen where the two of you get to evolve and level up by, you know, leaning in a little bit to that stress. Ooh, I liked that.
Yeah.
Stress and safety. Did you come up with that with the two S's? I had a feeling.
No, that's Terry's.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's do another question. I'm sitting on the floor here, by the way, in my Airbnb. My bum is numb.
I love this question. I love it when it comes up, when people are reaching out to me for therapy. I love that it came up here. What do I do if my husband doesn't believe in therapy and refuses to go?
You answer. You love this question. You answer.
This makes me chuckle inside a little bit because it's not original. And I'm like, what? First of all, what don't they believe in? Therapy exists. It is a thing. It's like gravity or the NFL or, you know, Michelin restaurants. They exist. You don't get to believe in them or not. So it's something else that he doesn't believe in. It's not therapy. It's spending time in therapy. It's spending money on having someone else solve a problem for you that you can't solve by yourself. It's being vulnerable. Like, what doesn't the person believe in? And usually when I ask this question, I get this answer, which is, I don't know why we would pay somebody to help us do something we can do on our own. And I go, okay,
do it.
Don't.
I would love for you to be able to do it on your own, not have to spend money and time. And probably not,
you know?
Yeah.
Apparently the wife thinks you're not. In this case, the wife thinks you're not doing it on your own. But if your answer is, I don't believe in therapy, and then the second piece is, because we can do this on our own, I'm like, great. What do you want to do? What is your solution, or what is your suggestion? Alternate therapy, you know? Like,
yeah.
So I think it's a false flag when people say, I don't believe in therapy and I refuse to go. Because it distracts from the real issue, which is something is broken and someone has proposed a solution, And rather than say, I don't like that solution, here's another solution.
Right.
They say, no, I don't believe in that solution.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
Particularly if you can go back to the part where something's broken, you know?
Hmm. Interesting. You said that it distracts. So I would get really curious. Like if my partner said, nah, I don't believe in that. You know, if I said, hey, I think we're really out of shape and we should probably join the local yoga studio and do some hot yoga.
I don't believe in yoga.
And my partner, I don't believe in
I
that.
Believe
like,
in
okay, tell me more. Like believing in something is interesting. I want to understand where you're coming from. But you're right. It does distract because that's an inflammatory statement. Nope, not interested. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in that. And what that's mm-hmm. intending to do, like you said, is distract you and get you off of what is really going on, which is something's not right here and I want to make it better. But with him introducing mm-hmm. that new inflammatory statement, it's now having you, rather than talking about your need, now you're arguing with your partner's belief system. So I mm-hmm. would say, don't, like you said, don't take the bait like you did with, or Rebecca did with you. Don't take the bait. Go, wow, that's really interesting. Tell me more about that. What is your belief system? What is underneath that for you?
Yeah. What do you believe in?
What do you think would be a good solution?
Yeah. Here's who I'd believe if they told me they didn't believe in yoga. I'd be like, you don't believe in yoga. Have you tried yoga? And if they said, yeah, actually I went to yoga for 3 years and I really tried, I really tried three different models. And I actually, I saw a little bit of improvement, but it didn't get me the results that I wanted. So yoga is not the thing that's going to help me, you know, lose 40 pounds or lower my cholesterol or, you know, feel more at peace with myself. I go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for that wise reflection on why you don't believe in yoga. But, you know, just to say, I don't believe it. Why not? Well, it just seems hokey. Okay.
Yeah.
So we're not actually having a conversation. We're just, you know, so I think part of what you have to do is, again, not get distracted by the false flag and instead go, okay, fine. First of all, what don't you believe in? I think is a,
right.
It's a little bit of a taunting question, but then what do you believe in? What do you believe will help us achieve the change that we want? Well, I think we're fine. Okay. But you're missing the part where I don't think we're fine.
Right. Yep.
Are you tracking with me? Yeah.
Yeah, I totally do. And it's interesting.
And if one of you thinks it's not fine, it's not fine.
That's right. It's not fine. Yeah. We were watching a workshop and, oh no, you said something about people who are here willingly and people who are not. What was the word that you used? I loved it.
Draggies and dragors.
Yeah, the draggies and the dragors.
Some of you are draggies. And some of you are dragors, you know.
Which, yes. And I will say that as a therapist, we, especially a couples therapist, we are 100% accustomed to one of you being bought into the process and the other person not being interested at all and very resistant to the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are with a skilled mm-hmm. therapist, they will know how to navigate that. We just have to figure out what the why is for your partner. And I keep mm-hmm. saying this, that if your partner is just showing up because you're unhappy, that's fine. It got them in the door. Eventually, in order to continue the mm-hmm. process, they're going to have to come up with their own why. They have to settle into
eventually they're going to have to move towards
desire.
Something. They're going to move towards
that's
something
right.
positive.
That's yeah. right.
They're going to move.
Oh, wait,
this is a callback.
Good circle back. It was a callback. Well done.
This is a callback.
Hey,
yeah. They have to move toward the positive thing versus away from the negative thing.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys out there in listener land, we have a lag which is why we are talking over top of each other. And it is not me being mean or rude to Laura. This is a sound lag and it is why mm-hmm. we are stepping on each other. And if you are annoyed by that, I'm really sorry, but it's just an audio problem.
Yeah. It is just my
sweet who are upset.
Caramel internet. I know. Well, we keep getting feedback that it's, I mean, it's probably a little triggering for some people, and I get that. It's not for me at all that you talk over me, but
yeah.
Hey, I have been balancing my core without any sort of seat sitting on the floor here. I'm quite uncomfortable, and I'd like to finish this up so I can go to breakfast. So what do you say we land this plane?
We got it.
We got it.
All these questions
I
answered. I wanted to say one more thing just about this on the last topic, though, which is, you talked about resistance, and I'll remind everybody of Stephen Pressfield's theory of resistance. Stephen Pressfield wrote a book called The War of Art. And he says, resistance only shows up when the thing you're trying to do is important. Resistance never shows up when you're just trying to like binge on Netflix or, you know, go just, you know, veg on, you know what I mean? It only shows up when you're trying to do important things. So if there's resistance, say, to therapy, it probably is a clue that that is an important thing for you to be paying attention to. So that's the other thing I would say to this guy who doesn't believe in therapy and refuses to go. Okay. I'd figure out how to say it artfully, but that is a piece that I have also paid attention to.
Well
okay,
done.
You got breakfast. I do stuff to do. And then I got to go pick up my wife from surgery.
Yeah.
So
has she gone in yet to surgery, do you think, or do you think she's still lying in a bed, getting prepped?
I am subscribed to surgery updates, which means when she goes in, I'll get a text and it'll say, your friend is in surgery now. So I haven't gotten that text, which means that she's probably still in prep.
It also means that she still has access to her phone. It also means that you still have an opportunity to repair before she goes in for surgery. So I'm going to go ahead and be the angel on the shoulder.
I'm going to do that next.
Appreciate
as soon
that.
As I get off.
Man, okay. See, I'm a friend of the marriage here, just helping one marriage at a time, including yours. All right. Toodaloo.
All right.
See you next week. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. Thank you for hanging out while we just continue to do life and also fit our podcast recordings in, no matter where we're coming to you from the world, delays or not. We so appreciate everything that you do. Thank you for all of your iTunes reviews, by the way. If you haven't given us a 5-star review and shared with other folks what you have found helpful, hop onto iTunes and do that for us. Thank you for all of your time and attention, making your relationship better today than it was yesterday.